The gate sprang open on the yard, and the coven charged through just as Fitzy tossed a flashbang in their midst.
Close your eyes!
Britton aimed his pistol. He hit the first dummy in the chest, sending a puff of white flame that crawled across the cloth surface, spiraling upward and growing. Richards took the next dummy. Fitzy grinned and pulled the pin on another flashbang, tossing it toward Britton. Britton took a dummy between the eyes and opened a small gate in midair. The flashbang passed through. Suddenly, the ground vomited a throng of black insects, pouring forward on hundreds of tiny legs. They swarmed the next dummy, the white cloth gone black in tightness beneath their squirming mass, shreds flying. Downer recovered and swept her arms upward. The flames about the dummies danced, grew, and solidified into three man-sized bodies of fire, leaping from their source and racing to the next dummy. Five more elementals jumped from it, making for the Humvee.
Damn it, Rictus, get in the game! They're all dead, damn it!
Truelove stretched out his hands. The goblin corpses behind the post lurched upright.
The Humvee! Go for the Humvee!
Richards' insects swarmed, sliding their tiny bodies through the seams in the doors. Inside, the dummies began to jerk beneath hundreds of tiny mandibles. The elementals leaped onto the ball turret, incinerating the gunner and pressing fiery limbs against the turret hatch. Truelove's walking corpses shambled with surprising speed to the vehicle's side, throwing gray shoulders against one quarter panel. Truelove smiled as the Humvee jerked upward and toppled onto its side, burning brightly, its occupants rent to ribbons. Britton sent a gate sideways through it, slicing the Humvee down the middle in a coup de grace. The coven turned to Fitzy, who stopped his watch.
Minute 30, you fail. Keep up like this in a real combat situation and you'll be dead before you get to do any stupid show-off moves. Rictus, what the hell was that? You lose a goddamn contact back there? What the hell would you have done if that had been a real grenade? Christ, you're pathetic!
Despite Fitzy's words, Britton flushed with pride. In less than 2 minutes, they had wiped out a small platoon of enemy and disabled a crew-served vehicle. They had done exactly what Fitzy had instructed, entering alone and finishing with an army. Fitzy ranted, and Britton turned away. They had done brilliantly. He wasn't going to listen to any crap.
Where the hell do you think you're going? You still owe me Mac practice!
Britton turned back to him, face hard. He holstered his pistol.
Mac? Sure. No time like the present.
You want a public whooping? That's fine. You certainly earned it.
Fitzy jabbed at Britton's nose, and the larger man skipped back lightly, slapping the hand down. Britton took a step, stomping on Fitzy's ankle. Fitzy paused, his eyes flicking across the rest of the coven, standing agape. He looked back at Britton, concentrating.
If that's the way you want it...
Britton caught his right cross in midair and pivoted, swinging Fitzy forward. He opened a gate in front of him, and Fitzy went sprawling into the darkness of Portcullis's loading bay. Britton closed the gate and opened another one directly behind Fitzy. He jumped through and spun on one heel as Fitzy turned to face him. He opened another gate behind the chief warrant officer as his boot connected hard with Fitzy's face, sending him sprawling back through into the practice yard. Britton stepped through after him.
Yes, sir. That's the way I want it.
G-Mac! You're getting a little ahead of yourself, don't you think?
Just trying to impress you, sir.
Oh, I'm impressed. Now let's see how you do with no tricks up your sleeve.
He advanced again, no fainting jabs this time. Britton tried one of his own, and Fitzy slapped it down. Fitzy used the momentum to pivot on his boot, bringing an elbow crashing into Britton's ear.
Harder when you gotta fight fair.
Then he brought the steel toe of his boot up into Britton's balls.
Delusions of adequacy.
This attack was just a taste of what's to come. The word of the Lord is clear. I will come near to you for judgment. I will be quick to testify against sorcerers. When this government of Satan heeds the word of Almighty God and ends the tolerance of the devil's magic, we will lay down our arms and negotiate. Recorded message, Church of Christ, Militant.
We did good today.
Britton nodded, groaning inwardly. Truelove probably thought he was comforting him after the beating he'd taken, but he couldn't have cared less about that. Marty hadn't mentioned the worm since Britton had first asked, and Scylla's offer hovered like a vulture on the fringes of his mind.
Hell, we did great. No matter what Fitzy says, that was a damned sweep.
Chris, pour one out for the toughest act in the United States Armed Forces.
Make that two. He knows what he's got now, and it can't be long before they start running us on real missions.
Against whom?
Against whomever, the bad guys.
The bad guys will probably be a pack of confused kids like you used to be. Or maybe Marty's kindred. You like that idea?
He needs another dose of dampener.
What the hell is wrong with you? You've been given a clean slate. They're making you into a superhero and you don't even care. Look what your magic is doing. You saw what I did today.
Have you seen this place? It's a damned fortress. Look at the locals. Look how they treat Marty and the rest.
They're fucking goblins, Oscar. They attack our base every damn night.
And why do you think they do that? Maybe it has something to do with the fact that we set up a military outpost in the middle of their land?
We give them jobs. They work here.
For what? I don't even know what they're being paid. Surely they're not using U.S. dollars out there in the open country. How does Intertech pay them?
With coupons for the PX. They use them mostly for stuff they don't make themselves. Plastic containers, synthetic clothing, but mostly processed sugar. They love it.
And for that, they're treated like indentured servants. They're carved up like high school lab experiments.
What the hell are you talking about?
Go to the damned cache. They're dissecting them there. Christ, true love, you use their dead as practice dummies. You want to tell me that's okay in their culture? They don't honor their dead the way we do?
So we study them. Big deal. We dissected frogs in biology class all the time.
They're not frogs, damn it.
For all you know, they're honored to give us their dead.
I doubt it.
Guys, it's okay. It's okay.
Look, I am trying here.
So am I. And that doesn't mean doing whatever the hell some murderous idiot tells me.
What's so wrong with that? Why is it so bad to fight for your country?
Nothing. So long as you choose to take that fight on. Didn't you take civics class? Don't you know what this country was founded on? Freedom, Sarah. Freedom to choose sides. We're a democracy, damn it. Or at least we were before the Reawakening Commission and the McGower-Lyndon Act. Christ, do you even know why I'm really here?
Yeah, because they tagged you. You've got an ATTD implant.
Britton nodded. Fitzy or Harlequin must have told them. Hell, Therese had said half the sass knew.
So just run then, if it's so bad. Take a hike. Those things work fast. You won't feel a thing.
Britton opened his mouth, then closed it. It was not as if he hadn't considered the option.
Now I know why you don't. Because you used to be army, and now you almost are again. You are protecting your country, and you know it. Harlequin said we'd probably wind up fighting narco-terrorists in South America, or keeping the Chinese out of Taiwan, or catching pirates in the Straits of Malacca, whatever it's called. But once we're doing that, you're gonna be happy again because you'll be helping people.
She's got a point. But you know the real reason you stay?
Et tu, Brute?
Curiosity. There's a whole world out here, and like it or not, you've got the keys to the kingdom. You want to see what's up just as much as the rest of us do.
Britton searched his head for a rebuttal and found none. But Scylla's words haunted him.
I cannot imagine a life lived under someone else's thumb just to keep him from having to be afraid. I cannot imagine having to never truly be myself again.
The sock might train him, give him a chance to do something with his magic, but it would always be by their leave and for their ends. There had to be a better way, to neither run nor fight. Serving the sock wasn't it.
No anger?
Marty came up behind them. He touched Downer's wrist, and the girl instinctively jerked away.
No anger us. Plenty anger others.
Tell her, Marty. Hell, tell me. Why are you even here? Why do you work for Intertech? I see how they treat you. Why aren't you fighting with the rest?
Other tribes. Not Matab Osara.
Matab on what?
It's the name of his tribe.
Why doesn't your tribe fight?
Oh, water babies.
What the hell does that even mean?
He means we all come from the magic.
I get that, but that's not even true. Marty, we came from another world.
Came back. You tribe lost.
What? You mean we're from the source originally?
Matab on Sara, no fight. All water babies. Matab on Sara, help. Marty, help. Long time. We wait. everything okay.
How can you let them do this to you? That's not helping, that's suicide.
Help. Always help. Wait.
See? He doesn't mind. Why can't you just be happy where you are?
We're slaves. Slaves that kill.
You killed my boyfriend. You almost killed me. I killed people too. Harlequin says that's all behind us now. It's a fresh start. That comes from the president. All we have to do is forget it and start over. I can do that. Why can't you?
The hell with this. Marty followed him out, stopping him with a hand on his elbow.
Okay. No anger.
It's not okay. You might be some kind of saint, but I'm not. You're one of the best people I know, and I'm angry on your behalf.
Marty did his ear-wiggling shrug, not appearing to understand. Britton squatted in front of the goblin, putting his hands on Marty's narrow shoulders.
Marty, I need that worm. I really need it.
Switch room is hard. Many people.
Maybe I could help.
So important?
Yeah, it is.
Important.
Important.
The tongues of blazing fire, the ice storm's savage trill, the gale and steadfast mountain all serve our nation's will.
Excerpt from the Sock Anthem, Palerastus Ministro. Therese's absence from the sass set off a war of emotions in Britain. Betrayal competed against worry that eroded into simple loneliness. Britton slumped his way through the morning video, wondering vaguely if the rest of the enrollees felt her absence as keenly as he did. They all seemed down to a greater extent. Swift sagged in his chair, pale and harrowed-looking. Pyre and Peapod bickered quietly beside him. Wavesign's control seemed to have regressed, and he reigned steadily in a corner. One of the enrollees had raised the flag during control class that morning, which set Swift into his usual fit of impotent screaming that a resigned salamander didn't bother to check. He administered a perfunctory oath at the base of the flagpole before jogging back to the group to resume instruction. Britton went through the exercises, not really paying attention. He realized that he no longer needed them. His basic control was fluid, solid. He could call and shunt away the magic at his will. There was nothing more for him to learn there. He looked at Swift and shook his head. It was becoming impossible to sympathize with him. The man's impotent posturing trapped him in that tiny space, his world becoming the whole of the little muddy compound. And for what? Pride? Some obscure ethical point that nobody apart from him even cared about?
How are you any different? You're both resisting. How are you any better? I am better. I'm looking for a way out. Swift is sulking. I don't know what the hell he thinks he'll accomplish by spinning his wheels here. At least I've got a plan. Really? And what plan is that? Get the worm that is never arriving? Get Scylla out of her cage? Face the music, pal. Your plans stink. You and Swift are closer than you think.
Scylla paced the yard, her guards quaking behind her.
Have you forgotten me, Oscar? Won't you let me help you?
Britton looked at his feet until she passed.
Morning, novice. You ready to do some good?
You bet I am, sir.
Good, let's go.
We in a hurry, sir?
Got a problem that you're uniquely suited to solve, Keystone. About time you earned your wings, so to speak.
They moved up the muddy track and through the checkpoint out of the sock enclosure and down another wider road that led toward the FOB's central plaza. Britton realized a moment later that they were heading toward the cache.
Therese.
His heart leapt.
I'll give you the full rundown soon. Just shut up and haul ass for now.
They ran to where a miniature trauma center had been set up under a new tent on a freshly laid gravel bed. Two sentries stood at the entrance, carbines ready. They nodded at a glance from Fitzy and stood aside to let him and Britton pass. The center's interior was kitted out for emergency care, with two gurneys and mobile medical pallets piled with equipment. Britton could make out surgical tools, a defibrillator, and a heart monitor. A doctor stood ready, two goblin orderlies at his sides, already scrubbed up and ready to work. Beside them stood Therese, also in scrubs, a physiomancer's lapel pin prominently displayed, as well as a polished and worried-looking army colonel. His name tape read Taylor. Three combat operators stood in the tent's other half, geared for dynamic entry in all the tactical gear Britain's own men had worn on the high school roof. Tabs arced across the Velcro patches on their shoulders, special forces. Beside them, a Sock Hydromancer stood. He was likewise rigged for war, but carried no weapon other than his holstered pistol, not that he would need one. Breacher read the subdued gray lettering across his chest, just below a thin, stylized gray wave. A burly Intertech contractor nearly knocked Britain over, fitting body armor and a tactical vest over Britain's head, strapping a pistol and go-bag to his legs, stuffing the pouches with magazines.
It's him.
The speaker was one of the SF operators, a grizzled sergeant first class, his face half invisible under the brim of his helmet and the fittings for his night optical device. His name tape read, Sharp.
Just give me a sec to get him briefed up and hopefully we can make this work. We don't have a lot of time. They could be moved, or worse.
All right, Keystone. I need you to listen carefully and to focus completely. We don't have time to go through this twice. You with me?
Locked on, sir.
Good. You've been kind of cut off from the news out here. So you aren't tracking on the fact that we've got two kidnapped Marines out of the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force running support for the Bureau of Indian Affairs on the Mescalero Reservation. The res is gigantic. We have no idea where the hell they are. And to be frank, we were starting to lose hope that we'd ever get them back. But just about 2 hours ago, the kidnappers posted a video to the internet showing proof of life. The video also shows the room.
You want me to gate there?
Fitzy pointed to a computer monitor mounted to a wheeled cart behind the SF operators.
The video has a pretty good pan of the entire room. Hopefully enough for you to get a fix on the location. We had one of our information operations bubbas work up a scratch and sniff kit for you, so you can get a sense of what the place smells like. Mission is simple. You gate the team in, keep to the rear, and get the team out when the hostages are secure. Bring everybody home so the medical crew here can work on them. Sergeant Sharp runs the show, for you and even for Captain True Zero here. The Apache husband their magic users carefully, and we're not expecting a ton of sorcery on this run, but True Zero can suppress well enough if it comes to that.
You stay on our six and out of the fight. I can't afford to be worrying about you once we hit the target.
Don't worry about me. I was doing assault team insertions for years before I came up latent. I know the drill.
Let's give this a shot.
Britain nodded, a lump of fear and excitement working its way from his stomach up to his throat. The video was grainy, but clear enough for Britain to make out a wide, brick-walled space. A dirty gray concrete floor, a drop-tiled ceiling with water stains. Rusted machinery parts were jumbled in one corner. A flag hung on the rear wall over a green-painted door, depicting crossed fists, each clenching a rifle, positioned behind what looked like a winged wheel. A narrow black shape, vaguely manlike, rose from the wheel's center. A wide, knife-toothed grin stretched across it, narrow hands flexing dark claws. Britain thought the shape looked familiar, and a chill ran across his back. Crowning the display was a giant bird skull, striped red and orange. Four hooded men stood behind the two Marines, seated Indian style in their uniforms, their faces bruised past recognition. But they were alive.
Don't worry about that. Focus on the room. Your job is to get the guys in to do the job. Sir, that bird skull is awful big. How the heck would the Apache get their hands on a rifle?
Focus, Keystone! Intel's not your job here!
Britain did his best to focus on the room in the video.
What do you think?
I've got it.
Are you sure?
No, but it'll have to do, won't it?
I guess it will. All right, I want a pinhole, Keystone. Open for no more than 5 seconds. I want a quick recon of the room and ID any threats. Can you do that?
I think so, sir.
Remember, no bigger than a pinhole. We alert the enemy to our entry and this whole thing is gonna go south.
Britain nodded and cleared his mind. Then he leaned on the dampener, letting his nervousness, his desire not to disappoint the crowd staring at him, fuel the magic. The gate materialized perfectly, barely the size of a dime, shedding a tiny pinprick of light. He looked through it, then leaned back, shutting it, and nodding.
Room's empty, sir. No light source or obstructions. No threats visible. It looks like they abandoned it after making the video.
All right. I wish we had more time to prep, but we need to go now. Keystone, Captain True Zero, on our six. And do not engage unless called upon. In and out, quick as we can. Normally we'd have weeks to drill for an op like this, but things are different.
I've got it.
With all due respect, sir, I need you to secure the attitude. I cannot afford to be worrying about either of you.
You might want to hold off, Sergeant. The gate makes a lot of light. Better wait until you're through and it's closed before you go to the night optical devices. Otherwise, you might be running this op blind.
Sharp slipped up his nods, making a you-got-me face.
Folks might want to step back a bit.
Don't fuck it up, Keystone, or it's your ass.
Britton grinned and slid the gate open, wide enough to admit the operators abreast. The Special Forces soldiers hesitated a moment, staring at the portal. Sharp motioned them forward, and they went, following their carbine muzzles as if they were dragged by them. Britton and True Zero drew their pistols and followed behind. They entered into the darkness, and Britton shut the gate. The air was thick, close, and freezing. The SF operators snapped their nods into place, and Britton followed suit, the world transforming from black into pale green and white. Two metal doors stood at the far end. The SOF operators were already stacking up alongside it, Sharp anchoring the three men. Britton and True Zero took up position on the door's far side, shoulders pressed against the wall, pistols pointed at the floor, out of the line of fire as instructed. Sharp nodded, and the operator across from him knelt, sliding what looked like a dental mirror under the door. He looked at it briefly, then nodded back to Sharp and made a fist, thumb up. Clear. He then stood and tried the door handle. He sliced his hand flat through the air. Locked. Britton looked up at the hinges, rusted nearly solid. There would be no way to open it without making a lot of noise. Sharp signaled True Zero, and the Sock Hydromancer moved to the door. True Zero stood back and kicked the door. The SF operators dashed through, their infrared sights casting pencil-thin beams down the hallway, invisible to all but those wearing night vision optics. A short hallway stretched out before them, the floor cast from the same dirty chipped concrete, and the walls made of the same moldering brick. Graffiti covered most of it. Two doors were set in the hallway's left side, and one in the right. Sharp signaled one of the operators to cover the two doors. They checked the one on the right. This door was unlocked, and they rolled into the room, emerging a moment later, signaling to their remaining man. Clear. One operator moved to cover one of the remaining doors, while Sharp and the other operator stacked on opposite sides of the second one. The operator knelt, sliding his mirror underneath once again, then stood and shook his head, giving an exaggerated shrug of his shoulders.
Can you look in there?
I have to know what it looks like first.
Sharp moved back into position. He nodded to True Zero, who ran to the door, placing his hands on it. Frozen shards exploded outward, flying in True Zero's face. Then a round hit him in the chest, directly in the body armor. The Sock Hydromancer went flying backward. Sharp rolled around the corner to hurl the grenade, and a round caught him in the leg. The grenade, pinned pulled, rolled a couple of feet down the hallway. The other operators turned toward it, their guns dangerously out of the fight.
I got it!
The gate glimmered over a section of the berm beside Route 7, a thankfully empty stretch of road. The operators wheeled, dropping to their knees, knocking their nods up onto their helmets, and flooding the room with white light from the mounts beneath their carbine barrels.
Get out! Get out of the fucking crowd right now!
Over his back, Britton could see ragged men, gaunt and long-haired, moving in the room beyond. At least two lay on their sides on the floor before them, stirring weakly, bleeding out into the dust beneath them. Behind them, he could make out the hostages, their uniforms filthy, lying face down with their hands bound behind them. Sharp's face had turned gray as the pool of blood from his leg expanded, spreading out to make the floor slick. One of the operators slipped in it and went down. The enemy was pinned down in the close confines of the room, but they would make no headway. Britton knew a stalemate when he saw one. As Britton watched, a man stepped into view, one foot on the back of one of the hostages. His thick black hair tumbled from under a beaded cap, a cluster of feathers sprouting from the peak.